when you have very high ticket offers, you're not even trying to reach the masses. It would kind of be a waste of your time when you could go straight to the source of where are those $1 million plus businesses? What mastermind groups are those folks in? What events are they going to?
This is Digital Marketer.
Hey everyone, this is Mark DeGrasse, the president of Digital Marketer, and this is the podcast that keeps you up to date on everything you need to know when it comes to digital marketing, from the platforms you focused on to the kind of tactics and tools that are working today. Today, our guest is Charles Bird, the founder and CEO of Pure JV. He has an amazing record with 8 clients that added between $1.25 and $6 million in their first year. He has a ton of clients going on stage with Tony Robbins, people getting out of the Joe Rogan podcast. He is a master of both joint ventures and relationships in general. So I'm very excited to have you here, Charles, and hear how you do all that.
Thanks so much for having me, Mark. It is a pleasure to join you today.
Well, I think relationships and networking and all these kind of in-person aspects of marketing are becoming, you know, huge. I think what AI has shown us is that some of the stuff we do can be automated, and it's actually a good thing because it frees us up to do the important stuff for humans, which is connecting to other humans. So just to get us started, what does that mean? What does a joint venture mean for you guys?
Sure. So when I worked in corporate for 15 years, I thought joint ventures meant two huge companies coming together for this behemoth undertaking and basically getting married. But when you are living in the world of online marketing and so forth, you can think of them, and there's different flavors, but as promotional partnerships. So imagine one party has the audience and you have a product or service that is a good fit for that audience. So there's a transference of trust and authority from one party to the other, your product, their audience, or vice versa. And so these can be set up as one-off promotions, or they can be set up as embedded partnerships where your product or service is inside of someone else's product. So every time they make a sale, you're making a sale or getting a lead. So there's a few flavors of these, but that's basically the transference of trust and authority. And one person has the product, the other has the audience.
It sounds so simple, you know, and I think a lot of times marketers and business owners, entrepreneurs, those type of people tend to overcomplicate it. Like, okay, we got to get everything set and it all has to be perfect. And, you know, if it's not going to be beneficial enough for me, I'm going to blow it off. You know, there's a lot of, you know, preconceived notions that we have about what goes into these joint ventures versus what you're kind of saying, which is, no, it's cross-promotional, it's beneficial for both parties, and if it makes sense, if it's complementary, then it's not a big deal. Is that that the gist?
Yeah, one of the core ingredients to make them successful is to ensure actual alignment. Like, what are the specific reasons people follow Digital Marketer? A certain type of person is following that and getting certain types of value from you on sales strategy, funnels, tools, AI, all of these kind of topics. So anyone coming in with a complementary type of product, service, or message or content is going to work well. So whether that's sales or deep AI experts, or in this case, joint venture partners, those fully align and they're going to strengthen the relationship with the audience, give them valuable information, versus coming in with something they may be able to use, but it's not aligned with why they follow you to begin with. So you want to ensure a core alignment. And some of the things that hold people back from doing joint ventures, for one, they may not know how deals are structured. And I found anywhere in life, when there's a fuzzy area and you don't know the next step, it's easy to avoid. You just go do something you do know how to do. So number one, how deals are structured and put together. Two, people may think they're complicated. There's something I call the reciprocation trap, where people believe if someone else promotes them, they have to promote them back. They certainly don't. That's just a story people tell themselves. And sometimes it does make sense to make it cross-promotional, but many times that doesn't make sense. Like, your product or service might be perfect for my people, and mine may not actually align wonderfully for yours. So it's good to have those lines in the sand of what is a fit and what isn't. And another type of reciprocation trap that holds people back is maybe your audience is way larger than mine. So that can intimidate people where they're like, I'm not at their level, so I'll just hang out and until I am. Where the fact is, if you have something that can complement that audience and it's valuable, there's nothing holding you back from doing it except the story in your head. So those are some of the things that hold people back. And we, of course, help pave those over and create the path to deep long-term partnerships and lots of impact and revenue for everybody.
Love that. Well, and I love it. Yeah, you know, talks about how it's not just complementary in terms of the products, because I think, you know, marketers, business owners, we're always thinking of like, well, how's your product fit with my product and blah, blah, blah. Instead, you focus on not just that, but the audience and then the company and the relationship that you have with them, which actually leads to, you know, probably much easier structuring of the deals. Now, for that, in that regard, how are the deals structured? Like if I say I have an email list, I have 25,000 emails, I have my audience, and somebody approaches me, what could they propose that would be, you know, a good mix? And this is just theoretical.
Yeah. So I'll give you some generalized info on that. So let's say you have a purely digital program. There's really not much overhead for fulfillment. Those tend to be a 40 to 50% commission because it's not taking much of your time and effort to fulfill on that. Whereas something like a group program where people are getting more personalized attention, there's some coaching in there, there's live calls. The more overhead required to fulfill on the offer, the less the commission. So that might have a 25 to 35% commission. And then for one-on-one work, where you're working directly with a client, it's super personalized to them, that tends to have a 10% commission. So your product or service likely will fall somewhere within there, and you can come up with a percentage. And I encourage people to err on the side of being generous, but making it feel like just a fantastic opportunity for everyone. And I'll point something out with joint ventures, it's risk-free traffic, unlike paid ads where you pay whether they work or whether they don't work. So as you pay commission to folks, you're paying with money you wouldn't have had otherwise, while you're diversifying your lead sources. Each different joint venture partnership, each different stage, each different referral partnership, they are an independent lead source. So they all add up from event to person to JV, but you're diversified, unlike folks who bet the farm on Meta and then their account gets shut down or something like that.
Oh God, I've heard that happen so many times over the last week or two, just from like hacks, you know, and not hacks like technical, it's more like they were able to trick the account owner to giving access to the hacker who then spent a bunch of money, or what was worse is that the accounts got shut down. And so I love the idea of diversification because I think those kind of risks are getting more prevalent, and we've been heavily reliant on those paid ad platforms for, you know, years and maybe over a decade at this point. So it's I love that. Now, secondly, when you set up these relationships, because you're talking about potentially like 50%, that's huge. Do you do a test first before you kind of go big with it? And then second part of that question is, do you continue with the 50% forever, or is it more like a startup to the relationship offer?
Well, there's different models for it. So let's say your product is relatively new to the market. You very likely will want to start with smaller or mid-level partners to get your ducks in a row and learn your numbers and how things convert and what the objections are and tighten up your webinar if that's the kind of model you're following. But if you have a vetted offer that always crushes, converts well most of the time, you can just go big with those. Now, of course, you want to explore the audience alignment with the partner to ensure they also believe it's very aligned. But when you have a tested, vetted offer, swing for the fences. And if you have a newer one, A, start with mid-level partners, so the risk is lower. And it also, you're tightening everything up before you get to the major leagues anyway. Like you wouldn't even want to start in the major leagues, because if something doesn't hit, that will hurt. So, or if you have a strong network with high level folks, you can do segmented tests where you're like, hey, what if we try this on 10% of your audience, see how it does? And if it sticks the landing, then let's run that promo again to the whole audience.
Love that. Yeah. So it's kind of staged so that you could see, like, okay. Well, also, I'll stage it in a bunch of different ways. Cause if you're saying like those lower level partners, it's less risky. You don't want to burn a bridge with somebody who has a million followers and could, you know, change your life. So testing it out with some lower level one makes sense. But how do you kind of identify, like, what is a high level versus a medium or low level kind of partner for this situation?
Well, that has a lot to do with your specific model. So let's take a kind of compare people like me with high ticket offers versus people that have 1K, 2K, 5K kind of offers. The strategies differ around that. So when you have very high ticket offers, you're not even trying to reach the masses. It would kind of be a waste of your time when you could go straight to the source of where are those $1 million plus businesses? What mastermind groups are those folks in? What events are they going to? So we can be talking about direct referrals or speaking to high level groups, and that's aligned. Whereas my first product 8 years ago was a $200 productivity course. So you want to go broad. You want big promos to broad audiences. And so you're determining what the partner fit is based on audience alignment, what they're used to spending, and the strategy shift. So if you have lower ticket things, you do want to go broad and big. Whereas as you climb up the echelon of clients you're working with, you go to smaller audiences that are very vetted. They've invested 30, 50K in mastermind groups. They're over seven figures. Those are the folks you want to get in front of and get referrals from as well.
Excellent. Yeah, that's, I think that's really simple format for people to follow based on what they're offering. Hey, everyone. I wanted to quickly interrupt the podcast for a special announcement. If you're listening to this podcast because you want to become a better marketer, then I want to share with you what I believe to be the most comprehensive digital marketing program on the market today. It's called the Digital Marketing Mastery Certification. You'll learn to leverage the tools and channels to predictably and profitably drive awareness, leads, sales, and referrals. Everything you need to know to become a true master of digital marketing. We'll take an in-depth look at the core digital marketing competencies, including content, email, social media, community, digital advertising, data and optimization, and more. After earning your Digital Marketing Strategist certificate, you'll have the tools to effectively reach your target audience through a full scope marketing strategy. Get started today at digitalmarketer.com/strategycert.
Now, let's assume that I made the offer. I know my target market. I know kind of the levels I'm thinking about. How do I actually find the people?
Okay, perfect. So number one, I encourage people to work from warm. I think there's a story, I don't know where it comes from, but people think they're going to be reaching out to all these people they don't know. It's my approach is nothing like that. You work from your warm network. Who do you know that already knows, likes, and trusts you, who they themselves may have an audience that's a fit, or their network, they know the people who have the audience who's a fit. So by connecting with people online or going to events, or if you happen to be in masterminds, maybe they meet in person, maybe they're meeting on Zoom, I'd like to share some very tactical things you can do to connect with folks working from your warm network and radiating out. So let's start with if you're going to an in-person event. So number one, it's having a sense of the types of people you are interested in connecting with. It's always, actually, it's one of the first things I do with my VIP clients is list out what are your winning outcomes. And as an example, for my own, it's potentially someone's an ideal client, so that can be explored. Lining up joint venture promotions, so speaking in front of other people's audiences, creating a referral partnership, creating an embedded partnership, getting booked on the Digital Marketer podcast. I mean, wouldn't that be a win? I would think so. So knowing what your winning outcomes are, it's way easier when you're interacting with people at an event, like you meet in a hallway on a break, you figure out there's some level of synergy between what each other does. You don't know where that will lead specifically, but you're like, hey, there's some alignment here. What they're up to seems related to what I'm up to. And that's when you get their contact information, because giving your contact information is putting it in a black hole. When people get home from their event, their kids need rides to cheerleading, their dog needs a walk, they have client calls backed up, life moves on. So we want you to take 100% responsibility for the follow-up, because you're the one who can ensure that happens. So I'll show you a fun trick with the new iOS for all of us iOS users out there. The new iOS 17 came out with a feature called Name Drop. So Mark and I meet in an event, we're chatting it up, and all we do is touch our phones together like this, and your contact info will drop over. I also recommend taking too. A screenshot of it, so you have a sequence of who you're connecting with, so that they're not just dumping in your contacts with 3,000 other ones who you don't remember which ones to follow up with. And then I also have frameworks for the types of follow-ups. You could do this on a piece of paper, an Evernote note. I happen to use Asana for it. But I have lanes for the follow-up types. So intros that I'm going to do for people, people who may be a client prospect, people who may be a JV prospect, speaking opportunities, podcast opportunities. Because that way, when I get home, it's not a random follow-up process. It's what are the highest value follow-ups? And you put those first. And that way, you have a system for following up. And I'll share a really key tip, and that is there is a half-life to the warm and fuzzy coming off an event. So if like you and I met in Austin at a think tank, and I followed up on a message you had shared, and look, here I am on your show. Thanks again for having me. Whereas if I pinged you 3 months from now, you'd probably be like, who's this guy? So there's a warm and fuzzy that diminishes. It's a half-life. So you want to follow up very quickly after an event. I'm talking like the next day, the day after. And that's how you tee up an initial call. And on that call, you determine what winning outcomes align with how you can serve them and how they can serve you. And it leads to all these things: client acquisition, joint ventures, referrals, speaking opportunities, systematically.
Love that. Well, and I love the quick follow-up and the structured follow-up, because I think what impresses me the most with a salesperson is when they're very consistent. They're like, hey, I sent you this then, and you know, what's going on? And you know, here's where we met. I checked out your stuff online. You know, they personalize it. Yeah, but you could tell it's a system. And I'm like, oh, well, thank you. And a lot of times I'll identify that. And if I don't have time, but I'm still interested, I'll say that. I'll say like, hey, I'm slammed right now. Can't do this, but follow up with me in 4 weeks and I'll have more time. And the good ones too.
I'll give a tip for whenever someone says that. Are you guys ready? So number one, don't set a reminder to follow up with them in 4 weeks. Write an email right now with a delayed send to be delivered in 4 weeks, because that way you have no opportunity to drop the ball because you already wrote the email, and they will be quite surprised that you actually followed through exactly when you agreed to, because most people wouldn't. So no. It's easy to stand out.
Oh, that's a great tip. Between that and the take a screenshot of when you share your contact, because I went to an event recently and I was like, here's my contact. And I'm like, you're never going to find that contact info. Like, you have to remember my name, maybe my last name too. Not going to happen. Just for me personally, I'm like, I actually do selfies with people a lot of times where I'm like, here's us. We saw each other.
Yeah, that's an excellent approach. I highly recommend it where appropriate, because then they are back in the context. And again, we want to work from warm. It feels way more enticing to follow up with some, oh, you're like, I was just there. And oh yeah, I remember this guy. So cool. Let's line it up.
That's awesome. Now, in terms of timeline, because I know there is a follow-up process, and then you got to figure out the deal, then you got to launch the deal. Do you have like an ideal timeline for when all that stuff occurs?
Sure. So, of course, scenarios vary a bit, but I'll just lay out a common scenario. So, meet someone at an event, ping them within a day or two, if not the same day, or even better, doesn't always work like this, but if you can schedule a follow-up with them right then, that's pretty awesome. You skip those other steps. So then you'd have that initial call. In my JV process and how I teach clients to guide calls to land deals typically on the first call, as an example, I was booked to speak at the final war room within 6 minutes without anyone ever seeing my stuff because of how it was all pre-framed and who connected me. So there's very systematic ways for lining up joint ventures. So let's say the winning outcome was a joint venture promotion or a speaking opportunity on that first call. I got it through a flow I have. It's certainly not a script, but it is a sequence. And from there, I'd have the booking on the first call, and then it's just lining up the appropriate dates or timeline or things like that. And then making sure the partner has the appropriate assets. For something like a stage talk, it's relatively straightforward, like your bio, headshot, the title of your talk, the outcomes people will get from your talk. For something like a joint venture webinar, there's more moving parts from a tech perspective, and you want to make sure the partner has everything they need. So if we were lining up a joint venture webinar, I'd probably book it for at least 3 to 4 weeks out. I'd never recommend, unless big exception, to do it at the next week, because you've got to put the promo together. And even when you have it highly systematized, you don't want to be crunched on time and create any weird stress. So I'd book it 3 to 4 weeks out, get the partner the assets at least 2 weeks before so they have ample time to promote and share it with their audience and things like that. And then you have that promo and you're off and going. And from those promos, you can rebook with those folks if that promo hit it out of the park. You can explore going a lot deeper with them, creating embedded partnerships. Those are the gifts that keep on giving, because you make a single deal that represents ongoing lead flow. Going forward, you can get teed up with connections to their best partners. So it's a self-replicating process where every JV leads to two or three more.
That is fantastic. Well, I was expecting you to say like, oh no, you got to build up the relationship and do all this work, but you're basically saying like you get the deal that you were after within 6 minutes of being on the call with them. Is that, I'm guessing you're prepared for the call.
I'm prepared for the call, but I have a process. Now, typically I'm landing the deal by minute 20. The 6 minutes was an anomaly, but I do use it as a case story with all my clients as I teach them how to do that. I point out that it worked a little faster than it was even engineered to on that particular call. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, but it is a framework to do that systematically. And maybe you're not trying to line up JVs, but you are seeking to line up referrals. So all of this is systematized. For 30 seconds of background, I worked in the Silicon Valley for 15 years as a director at a $1 billion software company. So I left to get a taste of that entrepreneurial freedom I read about in books. So my first product was a low-ticket productivity course, and at the time was new and had no connections or lists. So started going to a lot of events, connecting with people online, and discovered joint ventures, got some traction with it, and then took my IT and systems background and simplified and systematized that whole process. So that's why it's so dialed in and systematized, and now helping my clients get on like Tony Robbins' stage. I kick off with Dr. Robert Cialdini later this week, doing some really big JVs with him. So it's just a framework to get your product or service in front of other people's clients, audiences, and do it in a very systematic way.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, for the actual offers, because I know you mentioned, you know, closing the deal, does that mean you're going to be doing a webinar for them, or you'll be on their stage or on their podcast? Or what is kind of the initial action that kind of launches the relationship?
Yeah.
So, or the ones that you think are best or work best?
Well, that kind of goes back to what the winning outcomes are for you. And for me, they're direct client acquisition, referral partnerships, speaking opportunities, joint ventures, things like podcasts. So any of those are a win coming out of a call. So on the call, I'm feeling out what the best opportunities that are available. I'm also determining specific ways to provide them value first. That's a key tenet of this is it's not about what's in it for you. It's how can you serve and support. You're still feeling out what is a win for you on the call, but the point is to be useful to others in a systematic way. And it's not about being transactional. It's the opposite of that. It's building long-term deep relationships that you have someone who has your back and you have their back. That's the kind of thing that I like setting up.
Hey, givers gain, right? That's the old BNI quote that they drill into your head when I had my agency. So I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. You give something, you give value first. And actually, digital marketer, we talk about that all the time. You know, how do you provide value as quickly as possible to somebody else so that they, you know, appreciate you and will give you business in return? It sounds simple, but it's actually can be very, well, I was talking right now. I was like, well, what service can I offer? And you said like, whoa, no. Value first, give somebody else the value. So let's talk about that. So let's say I have a webinar that I give, leads to a book that I sell. What would I'd say I'm brand new. I have nothing. I don't have an email list. I don't have a following. What can I offer to somebody else who has something that I need, like the audience in the meantime?
Sure. So I recommend that folks come up with their, I'll say professional ways to provide value. And then there's also personal ways to provide value. So I'll share mine that are my go-to. Everyone's can be different based on where there's strengths. But mine, lining up 2 to 6 joint ventures a week for 8 years means I happen to have a strong network. So I can talk to almost anyone and I'll have some good connections for them, whether those be client referrals, joint venture referrals, or maybe they're redoing their branding or they need a copywriter or whatever they need, I'll know someone who can do it. So that's one way to provide value. Another would be giving them tips or recommendations on tools or resources that would simplify what they're doing or strategic input. So those would be some professional ways to provide value. Whereas like there's personal ways, like Dan Martell, I talked to him and his family through how to buy Burning Man tickets and pack for the trip. So there's personal ways to provide value too. So if someone's newer, you still are going to have some level of expertise. It could be on a professional topic that's something you excel at. It could be on dog training or parenting or something. You just listen to what they have going on and find a way to be useful. Even at an in-person event, as you meet people and hear what they specialize in and what they do, your fifth person later you're talking to might express a need for exactly what they do. And you can be like, hey, you got to go talk to Mark. He does exactly what you need. So you can, I'd say, generate ways to provide value in very short order if you're paying attention.
Fantastic. Yeah, I didn't think about any of that, but that's, going back to that value. It's the information is enormously valuable. And even if it is just introducing, say, a new app or something that's useful to somebody, they weren't going to get that from anywhere else, or maybe they would see it but not be able to, you know, trust that recommendation because it wasn't somebody that they were talking to in person, which you're talking to them in person, so you'll be the one to do that. So that's all fantastic. And I think the networking side is enormous for business, especially small business, because just a couple connections could change your entire, company like overnight. So you need to go out there and make that. So in that regards, in terms of the networking, you mentioned a lot of masterminds, a lot of these, kind of higher level groups. How do you recommend somebody gets into it just to get started with that type of networking?
Sure. Well, for one, identify which groups kind of align with the level of business that you're at. Look at the kind of people going to them and determine, do I love hanging out with these people or not? Like, go to groups that you really click with and feel right at home. There's just more than one out there. So don't feel like the first one you're introduced to is you know, where you need to stay. So explore that. And then it's also very much based on having a strategy and what level offer you may be providing to folks to determine, is this group complementary to that? Is it full of ideal partners or people who have communities or groups or rooms full of your ideal client? I wouldn't particularly recommend joining a mastermind to acquire clients, but that naturally happens all the time, especially if you're speaking to those groups and providing value. People follow up with you and want to work with you. So yeah, I would ask your friends who you respect or mentors or peers what groups they're part of to just get a sense of how these work. And really, the in-person is certainly my favorite because that's where you can build long-lasting, great relationships and connect with people over, let's say, a three-day event. You end up building really strong friendships. And as you stay in touch, keep people top of mind. Like if you're chatting with someone who's an ideal client for one of your friends or partners, send them an intro, ping them right then. And so you're always looking for ways to serve others, and it comes back to you in just buckets full.
Well, those are some great tips. I think there's a lot of people that really think they could do everything cold, and it's just so much easier to do the footwork, join some groups, you know, actually connect with people in person. You could advance your entire business on a weekend like that versus the cold outreach. And I'm from content, so I always talk about publishing content to connect with people. That's a long-term approach. You're talking months, maybe years to get the kind of results that you could get from the in-person, you know, connection. So I love that, everything that you talked about, and very excited to, you know, we didn't get into the case studies too much, but I think in, you know, a new episode, we could get much more into that and possibly have you out to talk at one of our events.
I could drop a quick case study.
Sure.
Okay. So my client, Jackson Milan, came to me when he was at 1.8 million. A year later, he was over 6 million in cash collected through partnerships. He has an 11K offer helping businesses manage their money better and retain more personal wealth. He was running Facebook ads that weren't working particularly well, and they started working a lot worse when Facebook shut down his account. That's when he was referred over to me, and Jackson's a quick start. So hired me immediately, did everything I guided him to do. He lined up 70 joint ventures in 2 months, which is pretty insane. And then I taught him how to create embedded partnerships where his offers inside of other people's. He more than tripled the business, all the while touring Australia with his wife and two dogs in a 4x4 camper van. He sends me referrals all the time. And the one he sent 2 weeks ago, it said, "Charles has made me more money than any person on planet Earth."
Well, yeah. I mean, man, that's incredible. And that has all happened that fast is, you know, I'm saying of the 70 partnerships in 2 months, that's nuts. But, you know, like you said, you know, with the right structure and then just consistency of execution, all this stuff is possible, way more possible than randomly getting a viral hit that, you know, leads to all the money. I love your methodology the best. So with that said, where can people find more about what you do?
Well, you can head over to charlesbyrd.com, B-Y-R-D, and also have a special digital marketer only download. You can check it out. I'm sure you'll put this in the show notes, but it's my.purejv.com/DM for digital marketer dash podcast. Rolls right off the tongue.
No, we'll link it. It'll be fine. Well, thank you so much, Charles. This has been super informative. Love what you do. I'll probably be reaching out personally just to find out more information because, you know, I actually came from networking, but it's easy to overcomplicate it, even when you have done it before or maybe think you know what you're doing. Your structure sounds fantastic, so I'm very interested, and I'm sure you'll be even more successful after people hear this podcast.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Mark. It was fun hanging out, and love the digital marketer community, and founders, team, everyone over there is awesome. So thanks again for having me.
No, I appreciate that. And I think what makes our community really strong is people like you who are willing to come share the information and get out there and you know, provide value for other people. And that's the best way to get value for yourself. So really enjoy the talk. And thank you again for coming.
My pleasure. Have a good day.
All right. And thank you so much for listening. Be sure to hit that follow button so you get notified when all of our new episodes release. Please share this with a friend who's clueless about digital marketing. And don't forget to visit digitalmarketer.com where you can access all of our courses, certifications, and training programs. Thanks again, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
This is Digital Marketer.
Get ready for the two easiest ways for you to generate product photos for your e-commerce store. I'm Lauren Petrullo, founder and CEO of Mongoose Media and Digital Marketer Academy faculty member. I've managed over 50,000 SKUs for over 100 different e-commerce sites, and I cannot tell you the importance of quality product photos. Not only are they important for your website, but they're great to be repurposed in your email marketing campaigns, your paid ad initiatives, and your organic social media content. It's imperative that you have great photos because great photos sell your products and start conversations with your consumers. There are two great solutions when seeking out quality product photos for your e-commerce site. One, UGC. We know that native user-generated content wins all day on social. When you can get your customers to share back their use of your products in their voice, in their personal applications, you will see dividends when that is repurposed in your paid ads and organic social feeds. Secondly, don't have customers or UGC yet? Not a problem. There are cost-effective solutions in which you can outsource that photography. This and so much more is covered in my modules in our e-commerce cert with Digital Marketer.